Welcome to the Wednesday night Brain Pickup Pro teleconference live from Charlotte, North Carolina, and also Charlotte, North Carolina. Our very special guest is a good friend of mine. He's a realtor, business owner, real estate investor, and in part of our Building Your Dream Team series, I wanted to make a special welcome to Isaac Mance of Business Track Realty. Welcome to the program, Isaac. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Appreciate you having me on, Larry. I'm looking forward to tonight. I think it's a great opportunity.
Oh, that's great. That's great. We're really glad to have you because I'm telling you, Isaac, I get more calls from people saying, how do you find the right realtor? How do you find the right attorney? How do you find the right appraiser? Well, the good news is we pick the cream of the crop of the people that I know, and we bring them in here, and we tell, what are you looking for? You know, and I'm going to ask you some tough questions tonight, so I know you're ready, aren't you?
I'm going to fake some tough answers, but I'm going to give them the best I can for you.
I know you will. Man, I appreciate having you on. Why don't you start out and tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
My name is Isaac Mance, as Larry said. I'm with Business Track Realty. I've been a real estate investor for about a little over 11 years now. And what we do, like you said, as a realtor, we are putting together deals. We're actually partnering with clients now to develop strategies for them. So there's a lot of new things that are out there as an investor. Haven't been looking as much because I've been concentrating more on the business, which has been growing dramatically.
Right.
So it's kept me out of the game a little bit, but I've definitely learned a lot about the game, even from helping clients and staying abreast of all the new trends and that's going on, because as you know, it changes hourly sometimes.
Oh, it does. You know what's amazing, and I think I've said this before, some people say, I have 20 years experience in the business. Well, unless you're learning and growing and getting new information all the time, you may have 20 years experience, but it's 1 year's worth of experience repeated 20 times.
My thing is, if you're not learning something daily, especially in the real estate investment business, you're missing something.
You're absolutely right.
Well, I think the key is always going to be to give yourself as much education as you can.
Absolutely.
In the field. You never can get, I learn from my clients daily.
Yeah.
It's learn from other experts. It's a continuing learning process for me.
Absolutely. And you know what, Isaac? It always will be.
That's what I keep getting told.
And you know what? People in our position, Isaac, meaning that we deal with investors on a daily basis. I deal with them in selling them houses and doing the mortgage loans for them and teaching and training and coaching and mentoring. And you sell people houses and you're helping them analyze the deals and helping them structure their portfolio and manage that portfolio of properties. We have to stay up on this because people have to depend on us.
Oh, there's no question about that. I think that's the biggest thing I've seen is once you gain a person's trust, they really are dependent on you to stay up there. We have several clients that are going to do exactly what we say, and we've learned that we need to make sure we're correct because we're guiding them with, in some cases, their dreams of early retirement, their dreams of more positive cash flow. Some people are funding their kids' college tuitions, so it's you realize that there's a great responsibility coming with their trust that
absolutely.
You have to earn.
And it takes a while to earn that trust, but after you've been doing business with people for a while and they see that you have their best interest in mind, then that's when you have the kind of relationship you're looking for.
Well, I think someone said it best that if you do the right things, and as far as even the financial interest, as far as dollars are concerned, if you do the right things, the financials will follow. Always.
Right. Well, we have a philosophy here at our business that you put people and principles before profits, and everybody profits.
That's about the same as we have. We've learned a long time ago that the dollars are going to be there if you're doing the right thing.
Right. When you're not looking at every deal as just a transaction to generate money and you're looking at it as a relationship, then you can truly put people and principles before profits. Oh. And you can walk the talk, you know.
You got to. With us, we are far more relationship building than transaction centered.
Absolutely.
Just from the way we do business.
Well, let's get into it here. Let's start out with the basics, okay?
Okay.
Why would an investor want to use a realtor to buy a property?
I think there's several reasons, Larry, that an investor would want to use a realtor. One, we do have access, obviously, to the MLS, multiple listing service, and several other different listings available.
Uh-huh.
But probably the biggest thing for us is because we we only work with investors. We have other agents calling us, you know, daily, hourly, weekly, sometimes to tell us a good deal is coming up. So while we can do all the research and homework for our clients, we're going to spend, you know, hours evaluating properties and things of that nature. So instead of the client spending 30, 40 hours themselves doing it, let us do the work anyway.
Right, because you're in the deal, you understand investment property. If you have the right realtor, you're working with somebody that understands investment property and can guide you in the right direction to let you know whether this is a deal or not.
And that's going to be your key, is with the realtors, because we have access to so much information.
Right.
That we see so many different deals, we know what's going on in the neighborhoods. It's one of those, to try and learn that information yourself would be a full-time job. So we tell folks is we're going to do it anyway. So they shouldn't. We have a lot of clients that are still working a full-time job, and they wouldn't have time to spend an additional 40 or even 50 hours a week sometimes doing the homework that we do for them.
Analyzing the deal. Right.
So instead of spending the 40 hours, they're spending maybe two.
Exactly.
And we're meeting their expectations.
Yeah, you're doing the legwork for them.
That's really what we're doing.
A realtor's doing the legwork for them.
It's, you know, making sure that it is done properly for them. And the thing is, Larry, if you're having a realtor, you want to make sure that they're doing it for you, not just giving you a cookie-cutter approach. You need to make sure that you challenge your realtor to meet your needs because, yeah, Larry, you know your investment needs are going to be different from mine and going to be different from 100 other people's.
Absolutely.
But you need to make sure that realtor is meeting your needs, and it eliminates a lot of the legwork that really happens for it. So it makes a lot of the client's life a lot easier and just gives them access to the information, even the cash flow. We have access to tax information, things of that nature that you can get but might be difficult for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I have a lot of things that I want to ask you tonight, but, you know,
okay.
I think this is a good question. Why don't you tell me, as I'm building my dream team and looking at a realtor, what are some good questions I, as an investor, need to ask my realtor?
Dangerous question.
Man, I told you I'm going to put you on the spot.
Maybe I should whisper it just in case it's being taped. Dangerous one. The first and foremost question I'd say to always ask a realtor as you're building your dream team is, does that realtor, in our case, know investments? By that, do they deal only with investments? We say, why go to a generalist when you come to a specialist?
Oh, that's strong.
If they don't do investments, like, for example, you'll find a lot of realtors that if you ask them what do they think about the house, they'll say it's a cute house. The bedrooms go with the drapes. My childhood.
Yeah, we don't care about that.
If someone asks me, what do I think about the house? I'm going to do the analysis.
It's all about the numbers.
And if the living room looks good, I put the numbers on the living room wall. That's how a good house looks good to me. The other thing I would definitely ask the realtor is, one, are they an investor themselves?
Uh-huh.
How many properties does that realtor own themselves?
Oh, good question.
Because if they don't own any properties, they can't tell you about what it's like to be an investor if they're not one.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing we always say is, you know, do they own any properties, or does everyone at your firm own properties? You know, are you guys doing this investing on the side, or are you that serious and committed to your investor? That's one of the biggest things that we see. Also, we tell people to ask their realtor, provide me with a cash flow analysis. Test them. Because if they don't know what one is, then you need to go to a different realtor.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing we see is we have some realtors that do it on the side or some realtors that believe they can do it. But when they're really pressed about the numbers, they have to defer because they don't know the profitability. They don't know the cash flow.
Right.
They're just used to buying a house for you to move in. And you got to be very clear with them and saying, guys, how many houses do you own? Are you an investor, or do you do this on the side, or what's your specialty?
Right.
If they say we're good at finding a house for you to live in and you're looking for to buy a house to live in, they're the one to be with.
Right.
But if they're saying, we do profitability analysis, we partner with other folks, we speak with the planning officer, they need to know as an investor that they can meet your needs.
That's really good. That's good. You know, I never thought to take it to that level, but, you know, even just as simple as every time you're on the phone with a realtor, you know, that, hey, I'm an investor, I was looking at this property as an investor to buy, fix up, and rent out. Tell me, do you work with many investors?
I would even take that a step further. I have our clients, and again, it builds with the trust. They truly ask the realtor, would you buy this as an investment property? If so, why?
Wow. That's good.
Or if not, tell me why. And you really, I think a realtor's responsibility would be to tell an investor the best time to walk away from deals. We tell our clients all the time, sometimes you need to walk away, sometimes you need to run from this deal.
Wow. That's really strong.
That's the biggest question I would have them ask is, as an investor, tell me why this is a good deal for me to buy, or tell me why this is not and we need to find something better.
Exactly. That reminds me of Wendy Sweet, you know, my partner here at Financial Help Services.
Right.
It's not unusual for her. You know, every day somebody calls about a deal, and, she, you know, I'll hear her on the phone, well, why are you buying this deal? The numbers don't make sense. You know, it doesn't meet, number one, your goals you said you were going to do, and number two, there's no cash flow or there's not enough profit here for you to fix it up and sell it.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
I think with a lot of realtors, they're looking at it as, if I make the sale, I get a commission.
Yeah, they're more interested in the transaction than the relationship.
But if they can't explain it to you as an investor, so you should walk away with, we kind of joke and saying, explain it to me as a third grader.
Yeah.
So you should be able to walk away knowing completely why it's a good deal or why it's not. And if
yeah.
the realtor can't do that for you, they're not a true investor realtor. So those are the best things. I would always challenge the realtor to make sure they know investments.
Absolutely. You know, and if they don't, you know, don't put them on the stop spot. Don't embarrass them. Don't, you know, hey, you're not what I'm looking for. Just, you know, hey, well, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. And, you know, I'll give you a call next time I see something else. And then hang up and move on.
Oh, yeah, I don't believe in embarrassing people because I think, one, you never know when you might want to come back. You might want to buy a house for your primary residence, and they might be a great asset to have.
Absolutely.
You can't have too many assets in the community. But I think while you don't embarrass them, you make sure that you're also protecting yourself.
Absolutely.
So your key is end it, you know, don't burn the bridge because they might become a valuable resource.
Yeah.
But it's always just making sure they're coming off as exactly representing you as a client.
Exactly.
And that's going to be your biggest thing.
Exactly, exactly. Are there any others you can think of we should ask?
Definitely the houses. How long have they been doing real estate investments?
Uh-huh.
Have they been doing it for 1 year? Have they been doing it for 10 years?
Right.
What kind of houses are they personally involved in?
Uh-huh.
Because if they're doing rehabs or lease purchases, then they might be an expert. They can probably tell you some areas to avoid.
Uh-huh.
And that, what I always ask a realtor is, you know, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek question, but you always want to make sure, have you made mistakes as an investor yourself?
Yeah.
Because really? If they say no, then they're not out there.
They hadn't been doing it enough, have they?
I've made enough mistakes myself, you know, that I help my clients avoid.
The good news is your clients are able to benefit from the mistakes you've learned from.
Oh, yeah, I tell them all the mistakes. It can take a long time to go over some of my mistakes.
I hear you.
But, you know,
it's a learning experience.
It's a learning experience, but some realtors that haven't made the mistakes are because they're not true investors. It's a way of someone saying I'm an investor or, because all of us, if you've been in real estate, you've all had that one deal where like, whoa, that looked good at the time, but now
right.
It's horrible.
Now that you're in it, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the big thing is how long you've been an investor yourself. You do it on the side. Is this your primary focus?
Sure.
I would even check with how well they're known at some of the real estate investment associations.
Mm-hmm.
Are they a member of REIA?
Right.
What do other investors think of them?
That's always good, too, is to get another investor referral, right?
I would get another investor referral. For us, we actually have realtors that are our clients.
Isn't that great?
We get them all the time.
That's funny.
Asking how to do it.
That's funny. That is funny. Well, let me ask you a question. From your standpoint, how do you know if you have a good deal or if a property is a good deal?
I think the way you know it's a good deal, one is going to start with the person's investment strategy.
Uh-huh.
And again, your strategy is going to differ dramatically from mine or anyone else's. So the key, first thing you got to do is, you know, if you're looking to stay under $50,000 and that's your ceiling, make sure you stay under there.
Right.
Because $55,000 is still above $50,000. So if the realtor is saying I can get you a good deal under $50,000, it shouldn't be at 60,000.
Right.
But then what we do is literally we're going to run the analysis, the cash flow analysis.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking at how much is it going to cost to put the as your down payment. Another big thing that a lot of investors don't take into account is if you're going to hold the property, what's your tax savings going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Because even without renting it, you know, and some people are getting $2,000 back per house from taxes. Well, that could be a big thing to a lot of people. We're also going to look at can this house rent? What's the rentability? Then what's going to be about my profit rent versus mortgage? What's going to be my annual profit? So the way first thing we're going to do to look at it is run the numbers. And numbers, numbers, numbers. But the next thing you got to do is numbers can lie. You got to go actually and physically look at the house.
Yeah.
Is it in a good rentable area?
Due diligence.
It's the due diligence, and it's riding around saying, are there a lot of for sale signs in this neighborhood? Are there a lot of for rent signs in this neighborhood?
A lot of boarded up houses.
Are there boarded up houses? Are the cars on blocks? Would a family feel safe renting this house or purchasing, doing a lease purchase for this house? If I'm fixing it up, is it going to really cost me $2,000 to fix it up? Or now that I look at it with the inspection,
uh-huh.
is it going to cost me $15,000?
Right.
And what we do is we're looking at, say, your cost of your house is $60,000. Well, if your repairs are going to be $20,000, then your true cost is $80,000.
Right. That's just your hard cost.
Yeah, that's just your hard cost.
Not to mention, you know, your carrying cost, interest, taxes, closing cost, all that stuff.
And that's what you've got to factor in to determine if it's a good deal or not.
Right.
And I think, as I saw on even one of your pieces, is you need to make sure you're taking the emotion out of it.
Absolutely.
Because you have a lot of people that are feeling that this is a good deal, I like this neighborhood. Well, these numbers don't quite work, but it's still a good deal. If the numbers don't work, it's a really easy one to walk away from. But I think you really got to run your numbers and do your due diligence, go by the house. And what we do is, why we work with realtors, is see what the other houses are selling for the neighborhood. Have they been going down over the last 6 months? Have they been going up? Are they all about the same? Are they building new stuff in the neighborhood? Are you going to have to worry about if your house is older? Are you going to have to worry about some of the newer houses? Because they'd want to rent or buy those first.
That's a good point. Very good point.
So it's a lot of gut feel as we're riding in the neighborhood. You don't want to have the only house that's not new in the neighborhood.
You got to do a lot of due diligence.
That's your got to do the due diligence before you say that this is a good deal or not.
Wow, wow. What do you think some other important aspects are of investments?
I think your important aspects of investments are, like I said, once you get your numbers, but to get your strategies and to make sure that you are at least aware of all the different options that you might have.
Whether you're going to rent it or fix it up and sell it or wholesale it, is that what you mean?
Well, that too, whether you're going to rent it, whether you're going to fix it up and sell it, whether you're going to wholesale it. But know what is your goal, say, for 2 months?
Uh-huh.
What is your goal for 6 months? What is your goal for a year? What is your goal for 5 years?
Short and long-term goals.
Short and long-term. But also if you're looking to buy and hold or fix it up, what's available to you? Have you considered buying houses that are already tenant occupied? Have you considered buying houses from construction and renting them back to the builder? You know, so making sure that you have all your options out there. Because
Absolutely.
A lot of people, we found a lot of people just don't know, you know, they didn't know that you could buy a house from construction, rent it back to the builder for 18 months.
Yeah, a builder lease back.
And a lot of people don't know about those. But it's the key in to making sure that you have, as we're saying, have all your bullets lined up so when you're armed and ready to go out there, your strategy can be better. And the key we always say is stay on your strategy. If your strategy is under 100,000, don't go up to 120,
right,
even though you think it's a good deal.
Exactly. Stay with your goal.
Stay with your goal. Your goals can change, and sit down, and you should be sitting down with someone and planning the goals. But if you go outside your goals, then you start going from 110 to 120, and suddenly you're over your head.
Right.
And then that's when we've seen people get in trouble.
Right.
So those are definitely the big things. You don't want to get over your head. And
that's some good information.
Sometimes taking it slow is okay. You don't have to be like everyone that you always hear people saying they're buying 20, 30 houses a year. They don't tell you about how many times they've messed up on those.
Really?
That's true. Hey, listen, you know, I still make some mistakes every once in a while, but I treat it as a learning experience.
Oh, it truly is, but you've got to crawl before you can walk or run.
You're exactly right. You mentioned a little bit about the builder sale leaseback. Can you elaborate on that a little bit so people that are hearing this call, if they may not understand that, you can kind of elaborate on that?
Well, the builder sale leaseback, what we do is we'll contact certain builders and you can actually purchase the model home from the builder, and then they will lease the model back from you. So they're going to use it as a model and give you an 18-month, usually, rental contract, usually for 1%. So if you buy the house for $100,000, they're going to rent it back for $1,000.
Oh, okay, which is pretty typical as far as rent goes, as a general rule, right?
Right. It's actually, you know, we use a 0.9% where I am, but it's at 1%. It's still a typical rent. But what you're gaining is, one, with the model home, you're always going to have a few extras built in the model. Two, you know they're going to take care of it because it's their show home.
Yeah.
And the most importantly is usually as houses in the subdivision, when they start selling off and coming towards the end, usually they're going up in price. So
yeah,
usually
your
resale value will be a little bit better if you're choosing to sell it after 18 months. Because of the rest of the ones that have been sold in that neighborhood. So you have some extra features. It's been sold, and often the builders will come in and redo the carpet, so you have a completely new house, 18 months of cash flow plus taxes, and it's a guaranteed tenant. You know the builder's not going anywhere because they need to get that house off their books.
Right.
So it's a guaranteed program, usually, like I said, for 18 months, and usually you can buy it below what you would be selling it for, just based on the neighborhood going up and the subdivision going up.
Right, because they're continuing to build, and with inflation and the prices going up, you're buying at today's prices.
Correct, but selling it at 2 years from now prices.
Right, as long as you're not worried about competing against the builder and he'll be out of the subdivision in 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
But even if if the builder will be out of the subdivision in 2 years and all the houses are sold, then you'll still have a good market because, assuming it's a credible builder and the houses were built in good quality, you're still coming in cheaper. So you could put yours on the regular retail market and still make somewhat of money. It's a safer investment. Also, you don't have to worry about any repairs.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
And that's probably the biggest thing we're looking at is, as far as a safety investment, it's no repairs, guaranteed tenant from day one. You know they're going to keep it in incredible condition because it's their show home.
Right.
So it eliminates all those, you know, something broke or you know that will never happen with there.
Be nice if you could keep the furniture, wouldn't it?
Sometimes we've done it.
Do what?
Sometimes we've done it because
really?
You can write in the contract.
Wow.
That when you purchase a house, literally I have a piece of art in my house. That I say contemporary artwork in living room from model to remain with house.
Wow.
So when you buy that, you can buy all the furniture in the model home.
Yeah, that's neat.
It's just making sure you ask for it. Most people don't know to ask for it.
Wow.
You can ask for anything you want in the home, and usually they'll give it to you.
But when you have the right realtor, they know.
Oh, yeah, we ask for everything. I've been known to ask for books on the shelf.
Is that right?
I had a deal where we had the guy, the person that owned the house was an interior decorator. And we actually asked for the dining room cabinet, the dining room table, the entertainment center downstairs, the couch. And we ended up getting it all for $1,500.
Wow.
Which is an incredible deal. And I was told I had to go and check because my knowledge of how much a dining room cabinet would cost was about zero. But I was told for this kind of it would be about $1,000 just for the dining room cabinet.
Wow.
For the china cabinet.
Right.
Then another $900 or $1,000 for the table.
Wow.
But because we asked for it, for it to remain at no monetary value. We bought model homes. We said we want everything to stay. We want some of the books on the shelf. We've even got a couple beds.
That's funny.
Get it fully furnished and makes it even easier to sell.
Now, based on what you're telling me, it sounds like, and I know this personally, but you're working for the buyer, not the seller.
Yes.
Can you take a little bit of time, Isaac, and explain the difference between a buyer's agent, a seller's agent, and dual agency? I think that's very important.
Sure. I think, a buyer's agent is one, just like it says, you're representing the buyer, and a seller's agent is representing the seller, and dual agent is representing both. Now, where it becomes extremely important is whose interest do you have at heart? If I'm a buyer's agent, and we only work with buyers, I'm going to make sure my buyer gets the best deal. If I have to put in a ridiculous offer, I'm okay with that. If I have to get my buyer out of a contract because of an inspection, that's what we do. Because, again, I need to make sure that my buyer, at the end of the day, gets the best deal. If I'm a seller's agent, it's kind of the opposite. I need to try and sell the house for as much as we can. Hopefully get it financed and get rid of the house.
Exactly.
So I don't want lowball offers. I don't want, you know, them to be able to get out of contracts for inspections. I want the house to be sold.
Right.
And that's one of the things we emphasize is that, you know, if you, as an investor, make sure they're representing you. Because, you know, as we told someone, it's almost impossible to serve two masters.
It is impossible.
It really is. I can't adequately represent the buyer and represent the seller at the same time. Because then I can't give them the information they need. I've told buyers several times of, guys, this house came in a little cheap. They didn't mark the bedroom properly. We can use that to get even more money off of it. Now, we know that it's actually their list price is right at market value. But I think they'll come in at least $15,000 under.
Right.
Or at least $25,000 under.
Uh-huh.
Based on this information. And that's my job, is to make sure the buyer gets the best deal. So if you're a seller, that's their job, and you want someone negotiating with, on your behalf. You want someone to go to the seller and say, look, we all know what it's worth, but this is what we can get.
And if a person's working as dual agent, meaning they're working for the seller, they listed the property, and they're the one working with the buyer as dual agent, then they really, it's like don't ask, don't tell, because if the seller says, you know, if the buyer makes an offer, they're asking $100,000. The buyer offers 70, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the seller says, I won't take 70, but I will take 80. Well, you can't go back to they can't go back to the buyer and say that, because they have a fiduciary responsibility to the seller, and if they're the buyer's agent, they have a fiduciary responsibility to the buyer.
And what actually happens is both the buyer and seller get left out in the cold.
Right.
Because
they get no information.
They get zero. You're obligated to say, well, I can't tell you what the buyer's thinking. I can't tell you what the seller's thinking. All I can do is give you what they told me to tell you.
Right.
And that's doing both of them a disservice, because you can't sit down and if they would ask a question, which a buyer would, well, what would be a good range to buy for this? What do you think that we should put in an offer for? Well, they would legally have to say, I'm representing the seller. I can't even tell you what you should bid on it.
Right.
And that's where I think you've got to be able to help the buyer out and say, listen, here's a good range. Based on what's going on in the neighborhood, based on what we've seen, here's the market value. Here's what I would present as an offer. Now, they might not choose to take your advice, but you at least be able to put it out there. If you're a dual agent, they're saying, well, I'm not going to tell you what to put in as offer, and I can't tell you why or what's going on in the neighborhood, because then I wouldn't be representing the seller properly.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to take your money and take your paperwork, turn it in, and then come back to you.
Exactly.
And you end up losing.
Yeah, and that doesn't help you any.
No.
You need someone in your corner.
You really do, because like I said, you don't want someone that's serving two masters. It's either you're working with me or you're working with someone else.
Absolutely. Tell me, what's the best deal you ever found for a client?
Best deal we've ever found for a client.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Again, I'm going to make sure this is not Isaac. No. the best deal, I would say actually two I can think of. We found one where it was a foreclosure, and he bought it probably for around $250,000. I think it ended up needing probably about $5,000 worth of repairs,
uh-huh.
But they ended up doing some landscaping, about actually 10 or 15,000 landscaping, turned it into a southern estate.
Wow.
And it's now appraising at around 415,000.
Wow. That's sweet. They bought it at 250, you said?
They bought it at 250, put about five to ten in repairs, did major work on the outside.
Uh-huh.
Had it painted and landscaped, and that was
so
another
about 270 in it.
About 270, 275.
Uh-huh.
And it's appraising at 415.
Wow. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, they're now the problem is they want me to find another one of them like that.
You know, I've ran into that same problem when we were wholesaling houses to some people. We're giving them such a good deal, they weren't taking the deals that were, you know, 70% of appraised value because we got them in a couple at 50 and 55.
Oh, we've had a few. We found someone that had a tenant-occupied house, again, where you're getting the instant cash flow, but we ended up getting them about 25% in equity.
Uh-huh.
And instant with zero to repair costs.
Wow.
It was in incredible condition.
Wow.
And they now want all tenant-occupied houses, which is usually less equity.
Right.
But they want all tenant-occupied houses with at least 25 to 30% equity and no repair costs.
Wow.
And we're thinking, we would love to be able to pull that off for you.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
But they blame me for spoiling them.
Yeah, they blame you.
Yeah.
That's funny. That is funny.
But I would say those are probably our best Exactly. We found a house in the university area in Charlotte where he paid $91,000. We showed him how to refinance it, and his mortgage is right around $550, but uh-huh. It's rented at $1,000.
Oh, that's sweet.
He
got
paid
a $450 a month cash flow.
But the comps came in at $135.
Wow.
So it was a $450 cash flow plus about $40,000 and some change in equity.
That's sweet. That is sweet. That's really good.
Yeah,
now, are there any dollar figures you use to guide you in looking for deals?
What we often do is we don't want to go above really $115,000.
Uh-huh.
Because we found that renting that, and that's, I guess, for lease purchases, it's renting that is a little bit harder. Because once you get into the $150,000 to $200,000 house, those are difficult to rent.
Because you can't get the 1% rule or whatever, right?
Right. And usually if people are going to pay $1,500 to $2,000 in rent, they're going to buy it out.
Exactly.
Especially here in Charlotte. But what will happen is occasionally, and I won't say we've never done it, because we actually have helped someone rent a house for $1,800 a month. But those are the exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we generally look, want to keep it under $115,000. Generally, if we're looking at houses that we're going to fix up, we'll try to keep those even under $75,000.
Uh-huh.
Just because once you put in the repair costs, it can start getting too close to the $100,000 and $115,000. So those we often start with that. We don't go, like I said, above 115. And if it's going to be repair, we kind of look at around the 75 because we don't want them to spend more than $70,000 really on a house before the repair costs.
Right.
Now, as soon as I say that, we had a deal where it was $75,000 was the asking price, and there was about $30,000 in repairs, but he ended up selling it for about $125,000.
So he came out okay.
He came out okay because he ended up the total cost was $100, but he
sold
for $125.
Right.
But it's usually if we under $115 are usually kind of the dollar figure, and then under $70 if they're looking to fix things up.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of as a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, that's good. That's some good information. And you know what I found too, Isaac, is, and I'm not sure if you found this same thing, but the higher the price of house, not only the rent, you can't get the amount of rent you need, but the higher the price house, the harder it is to get as good of margins on your percentage of investment to value. Do you find that true?
I find it usually true. I think for us, we lose the percentage you really want once we get over $115,000.
Uh-huh.
For us, if we have clients that are looking for, say, over $500,000, it's a harder look because we're looking for those percentages. We still want the 30%. Or we still want the 40%. It's just a lot more difficult to find because your 30% is now $60,000, $70,000, $80,000,
$100,000
versus your 30% being $30,000.
Absolutely.
And it's a mental block of people saying, huh, I'm going to lose $100,000 on this house.
Or, yeah, yeah.
So it makes it more difficult to find them, but usually if you're, as you go up, it's often even harder to resell.
Mm-hmm.
And just because if you're, say you buy a $300,000 house and you do have that spread, you still, you're, including a lot of buyers.
Uh-huh.
On the resale market, on the retail market, they can afford that type of house.
That's a good point. That's a really, 'cause you want your bread and butter houses.
You really do.
House that more people out there can afford to buy.
Well, the more people that look, the more traffic you get. You know, then everyone can get in. It makes everybody happier.
Absolutely. You widen your market of how many people can afford your house.
And that's always a key point.
That's a good point. Now you're out there in the marketplace, and I know you know we are in Charlotte here. But do you see a high percentage of the deals out there that investors are buying are bank-owned properties?
We work primarily about 95% of what we do are foreclosures.
Yeah, me
and
too.
A lot of people have a myth about a foreclosure being a bad house.
Uh-huh.
Or even a HUD home or a government-owned home.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, too.
We've seen HUD homes in awful conditions.
Uh-huh.
But we've also seen HUD homes in move-in condition.
Right.
And what a lot of people don't know, for example, with HUD, is HUD just changed their vendor in North Carolina and South Carolina.
Yeah, it used to be MCBREO.
Right.
And they changed, didn't they?
They changed to its HMB, I think, HMBREO.
Right. Now, wasn't their website down for quite a while?
Well, their website's still not up to date,
uh-huh.
as it should be, because
uh-huh.
We actually spoke with the people. I think what happened is they didn't realize how big of a chore it was, and they're over their head.
Taking it on, right.
Taking it on. But what's happening now, HUD will go in and fix up to about $5,000 on a HUD home.
Is that right?
They're going to put in new carpeting and new painting,
uh-huh.
whether you ask for it or not.
Wow.
So a lot of people don't realize most HUD homes now are going to be in almost moving condition.
Now, tell us about this, since we're talking about HUD houses. You know, I have this idea that when you're buying a HUD house, they're only going to come off the asking price 5% or 10%. Until they make another price reduction. Can you tell us some insider secrets of how that works?
We've actually studied the prices before they made the change and even after they made the change.
Uh-huh.
Before they made the change, HUD properties were traditionally priced below market value.
Right. How much below?
We found in some cases around 10% as what they were priced below.
Oh, okay. So it's not a bad starting point.
Not a bad starting point, but HUD bases their acceptance on the net to HUD. So what they're going to, after you take out all the closing costs and all the commissions,
uh-huh.
they're looking at how much money they walk away with from the table.
Right.
And we had traditionally seen what they were accepting for some of the better properties
uh-huh.
was between 10 to 12% below the asking price as the net to HUD.
Right.
And that was what we found from studying several of the ones that were sold for several months.
Uh-huh.
Now, since they've changed companies, it's actually been a little bit different because the new company is actually marking them or listing them at market value.
Oh, okay.
So you're not getting that much of equity. However, we're seeing HUD accept them for as much as 20 to 25% below what they're asking.
Are you serious?
We saw one the other day that was at 23% of the net to HUD below what they were asking.
Wow. That's pretty strong.
That's very strong.
Yeah.
But what it tells folks is, as an investor, don't be afraid to make ridiculous offers to HUD.
Well, you know, the other thing is jump in there while they still don't know what they're doing.
Oh, that's what we're doing. Because I'm amazed that HUD still fixes up the houses.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do it before.
Me too.
And that's a great savings to any house that needs cosmetic repairs, knowing that HUD's going to take care of it. Also, HUD's doing the inspections now.
They are?
On some of the properties.
Oh, okay.
So, you're saving your cost of, you know, about $250, $300 for an inspection.
Uh-huh.
So you let HUD do all this stuff, because if you ask for it, if you ask for it to be included in your closing cost, HUD's only going to pay certain items on your closing cost. Generally,
right.
It comes out to around $1,200.
Uh-huh.
Now, HUD will say they will pay up to 5%, which is kind of most people don't realize, is if HUD will pay, say, up to $5,000, using the 5% on a $100,000 property, while they say they'll pay it, you can only use it on certain items.
Uh-huh.
So those certain items still are only going to total $1,200.
Right.
So you're weakening yourself by asking for them to pay $5,000.
Yeah.
Because then you could have made your offer stronger without going as high on the price.
That's a good point. That's a really good point, because it's all about net to them.
Well, it's the net to them, but if your net is, say they're going to accept $80,000,
uh-huh.
but you have $5,000 of closing costs,
uh-huh.
then your price is going to be $85,000.
Right, I'm with you.
But if you have $8,100,
mm-hmm.
then your price is going to be a little bit lower.
Right.
And that's the key, is making sure that you know exactly what HUD will pay for and don't ask for more. We try not to leave more than $100 on the table.
That's a very good point. That's it. And after you've been doing it a while, you know what they will and what they won't pay for, right?
We know exactly what they will, because we actually talk to the people at HUD. I've actually been down to their office here in Charlotte.
Is that right?
To go and talk to them, find out what's going on with the website. That's how we found out that they're actually doing the repairs.
Wow.
Where they're going in with the $5,000. And that's HUD's limit is literally up to $5,000. That's what they're saying.
Is that right?
That as far as cosmetics repairs, that they're willing to do up to $5,000.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of people are still asking for that in closing costs and stuff like that. So you have a lot of people that are looking at the house, and HUD is still in the process of repairing some of the houses. If they're on the website, right now they may or may not be finished because HUD's behind. But they're finished by closing. So
right,
if you're calculating, thinking, I need to adjust for my repair cost, then you're pricing it too high.
Now, let me ask you this question. If the website, and I'm assuming this is a national vendor like MCBREO used to be,
mm-hmm.
where it's the same website all across the country, let me ask you this question. If the website is not current, is there a way to find out about the properties without having to go through the website or being able to go through the website?
Unfortunately, there's not. We're actually trying to have our clients purchase houses that aren't on their website, and they're not making them available to the public. Apparently, they are backlogged so much that there are several homes that they haven't even made available to the public yet.
Wow.
And that's what we're thinking, that they're going to dramatically either reduce the prices or they're going to have to do something to get rid of the inventory.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be a buying season at HUD, we're thinking, very soon.
Wow.
Because the government can't continue to lose money like they are.
Absolutely. You're exactly right.
And
you know, now, what about other government, like VA or Fannie Mae or what's the other one? Is Home Steps?
Home Steps is a little bit up. Fannie Mae is actually interesting, too. They changed up in the opposite direction of HUD.
Uh-huh.
Fannie Mae is now not repairing any of the cosmetics things. They used to do the carpet and painting.
Right.
But Fannie Mae has decided that we're not going to do that, and they're not coming down on their prices as much.
Really?
What we've seen lately is Fannie Mae, I think they decided they have to meet their budget numbers a lot better. And
right.
they are being more of a stickler to, we're not going to sell it until we get what we want.
Right.
And so their houses, I think, are sitting a little bit longer. And people have to know that they're not going to be in move-in condition when they move in.
I think it's also important to note here that the majority of the bank-owned properties, not HUD, not Fannie Mae or VA, the bank-owned properties, those asset managers that you deal with
uh-huh.
when you're selling, or when they are selling those properties, as a general rule, the asset manager does not get paid for the net amount to the bank. They get paid for getting that file off their desk.
That's it.
So that's the reason that you have a lot better chance of negotiating with them. I shouldn't say better, but they will negotiate with you. In fact, I think I've mentioned this before. I know I've mentioned it before. I don't know about on a call like this or not. But if any time I'm working with a realtor on a bank-owned property, I will always ask that realtor, ask the bank if they own any more properties in this area and if they would consider a bulk sale. Sometimes they may have four other ones in that city, and if you'll buy all four of them, they'll give you a much better price just to get five files off their desk or four files off their desk at one time.
Well, that's a great point, Larry. Buying in bulk is the same as going to the grocery store.
Right.
If
Sam's Club.
That's where I go to Sam's Club. And literally, a lot of banks will do that just because, again, they're – what we tell folks is, for example, with Bank of America, they're not in the real estate business. They
right.
don't want to have any houses.
None of them are.
And the more they can get rid of, the more they're off their books, because mm-hmm. their managers are evaluated by the number of houses that have not been sold.
Uh-huh.
So if you can put a deal where you're getting multiple houses, they're going to come down significantly. And we've seen that before as well.
Exactly. That makes good sense. Let me ask you this question. Sometimes we go into neighborhoods and we see two or three, four vacant houses. Maybe they're nice neighborhoods. Maybe they're older neighborhoods. But if you can tell a neighborhood has had several foreclosures or quite a few, what do you think about that kind of area as far as an investment opportunity?
And that's actually a good question, too. That actually varies from neighborhood to neighborhood. Some are foreclosures because the neighborhood itself is going down. There's a mass exodus, and people are just leaving the neighborhood as quick as they can.
Right.
But what we're seeing other places is, if you think about really 2 years ago when the economy was a lot better, a lot of people were put in the houses that were kind of marginal. They couldn't really afford to be there.
Right.
So now the economy is turned down, they're being forced out of nice houses.
Right.
So what we're looking at is, as investors, it's a great time to buy it. You might have to wait 2 to 3 years to hold it, but you're getting a house that would normally cost you, say, $100,000, $110,000. You're getting it for $80,000.
Right.
And knowing that in 3 years, the whole neighborhood will rebound.
Right.
What's happening, unfortunately, in those 3 years, you'll have people that, you know, unfortunately being forced out, but it's still a good neighborhood.
Right.
So we actually look at those, and on several of them, we tell investors that, yes, this is foreclosure. Yes, your property value might decrease over the next 6 months to a year. But if you're going to hold it for 2 years, you can definitely make a great profit. But the other thing is you can get a great cash flow because, you know, it's easier to rent a, say, 1,500-square-foot house for $800.
Right.
And if you're buying it for $80,000, you can make that very profitable. So it becomes one of those, I can now get a bigger house for less money in a good neighborhood that's easy to rent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the whole key. As you buy more and grow and start doing more, you want to start upgrading. I'm not saying you have to start with houses, you know, $100,000 and plus. But as you grow and do more, you're going to start selling off the ones that are the lower end and keeping the higher end ones.
And because they're going to be more profitable to you.
Not only more profitable, but they're easier to manage. And one thing I learned a good while back is you can't get good people in bad houses or bad neighborhoods.
That's generally true. With the foreclosures in great neighborhoods, I know subdivisions where at least 75% of the sales within the last year have been foreclosures.
Wow.
And what we're thinking is, it's probably not a coincidence that they were all done by the same lender.
Right.
They
put them in. Well, you know, there's been a lot of mortgage fraud in the past few years. In fact, there's been several articles in the Charlotte Observer about it. And there's been, you know, investors and, you know, attorneys, appraisers have been involved in some of this stuff. And they're fluffing up the values and they're, you know, buying them, selling them to investors, promising to rent them out, over financing them. And they end up with zero cash flow and a vacant house, and the investor was a newbie, meaning new investor, relying on somebody else, and they ended up losing the house because they couldn't keep making the payments on it.
And we've seen that several times.
That's very sad, and I want to just take a minute just to say that real estate investing, it's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it. It's a learned skill. It's just like learning any other trade or business or career out there. But if somebody promises to do it all for you and all you got to do is sit back and collect the checks, you know, you need to do a little bit of investigating. I'm not saying that people that do that are wrong. I mean, you know, even sometimes we sell properties and put a tenant in for somebody, and, you know, and I know you're working with some of your investors as well. But if somebody promises all you got to do, all I need is your good credit and we're going to do everything else, then you better, you know, do your own due diligence. Do your own due diligence anyway, no matter who you use.
Well, I would say not only do your own due diligence, but if it's even a questionable deal or you feel a little bit uneasy about it,
right,
take it to another expert.
Somebody outside the transaction.
There you go. We evaluate deals for clients that have nothing to do with us.
Right.
But we're like, oh, this is an incredible deal. You need to accept it. Or take it to an attorney that you know. Make sure someone else sees that deal that you trust. Because sometimes it's the simplest things that you might overlook. But
right.
That expert can catch it immediately and say, oh, you need to run from this one. I've seen this happen before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, since we're talking about that, what do you think is the biggest mistake a realtor can make?
The biggest mistake a realtor can make is, one, letting people get so caught up in the idea of buying real estate.
Uh-huh.
You see the commercials, you know, I made $30,000 and overnight. And that is the rare exception.
Right.
But when you're dealing with people's dreams, they can buy into their own dreams and, you know, I want to buy the 20 houses a month. Well, if a real estate agent lets them do that, then suddenly 2 months down the road, they're way over their head.
Right.
And that's the most important mistake that we can do is sometimes we have to kind of pull back. People say, hey, guys, let's make sure we're on point. Let's make sure we have your goals sighted. So we can't let them get too excited. The other thing, I think the biggest mistake realtors can make is we don't do our homework. Sometimes, you know, it's Friday at 5 o'clock, and we don't feel like, you know, checking out the property, checking out the comps.
Right.
So we're taking someone else's value of it.
Right.
You know, the other realtor that called us said it's worth $100,000. We're taking their word for it.
Exactly.
You know, I what I would always ask is if someone, if a realtor tells you it's $100,000, have them actually show you the work that they did.
Yeah, let me see the comps.
Let me see the comps. Let me see your neighborhood. Let me see your evaluation. What did you base it on?
Right.
Because that's our biggest mistake is being lazy.
Taking shortcuts.
Other people. And the shortcuts come to bite you.
They will, won't they?
I've seen it done so many times of those shortcuts where I took someone else's. Or the biggest thing is we've seen if it's a tenant-occupied home,
uh-huh.
Did you get a copy of that lease?
Oh, yeah.
Because it could be tenant-occupied today, but the lease is scheduled in March 1st.
Plus, you want to know if they're current on the payments.
Well, you want to know if they're current. You want to get a full copy. You want to know, does that tenant intend to stay?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the tenant's going to move, you're not really buying a tenant-occupied house if they're going to move in 30 days.
And you're going to have to go in and paint and carpet automatic.
Exactly. So it's I've seen realtors not verify the contracts. If they tell me it's a Section 8 tenant, we call Section 8.
Right. Find out.
You know, let's make sure. How are they paying?
You're exactly right.
We've seen several where we told the people we're going to go call them, the Section 8 office, and call this office, and they'll tell us that there's no need to.
Right.
As soon as they tell me that, I'm thinking, good.
That's exactly why we're calling.
There's no need of us doing a deal.
Right.
But I think it's the not doing the homework, the trusting people. It's as you said, it's a job. And you know,
it's
you
not
need
easy.
A realtor that's going to be putting in the time
absolutely.
And effort to do it.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think about multifamily? I know we talk mostly about single family, but what do you think about the advantages or disadvantages of multifamily?
I think you have several. Actually, a lot of people are beginning to swing towards duplexes and quads and even apartment complexes.
Uh-huh.
There are advantages and disadvantages. One of the big advantages is you're buying in bulk.
Uh-huh.
So you might be getting 20 or 30 units. But the other problem is if they're not in a good area and all 20 are vacant,
right.
Then you're really hurting.
Right.
And I think it's more due diligence on your cash flow analysis. The bigger the deal gets, the more you need to see P&I statements.
Right.
I want to see all the accounting. I want to know their vacancy rate for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Were they hard to rent these duplexes? Were they not? Because what's happening is if you have one house that's vacant, you can sometimes work around that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a quad that's vacant, there might be a reason that all four rooms of those are vacant.
Right.
And you can get hurt harder quicker because is this now in a bad area or is something with the environment that makes this one bad? We had a client that was looking at an apartment complex where they said they were going to cash flow right around it was around $150,000 or $200,000 on a $1 million investment.
Uh-huh.
Cash flow $150,000 a year.
Wow.
And we analyzed it. We had the people send all the financial statements. We wanted two-year rentals history. We wanted to know what was their vacancy rate.
Sure.
It turned out the $150,000 that they were making was without debt service.
Oh.
And I said, well, if you get a loan for the apartment complex, you're really only making $50,000.
Yeah, or less.
Or less. And I said, off a $1 million investment, that's not a good return.
Yeah, no, it's not at all.
But that's, I think, is the biggest thing that the biggest disadvantages of them is you need to do more once you get past the single family,
uh-huh.
You need to do more financial homework.
Absolutely.
I want at least 2 years
uh-huh.
on anything past the single family. I want what's their rental history? you also, the downside would be in a duplex, say, for example, say something, a tree falls on it. Now you have two units that are now vacant versus
right,
one.
Right.
But that's the other advantage is, you know, you have two, you can usually get your duplexes cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, your total rent for the building will give you a better cash flow for your total investment.
Exactly.
So if you can get a better cash flow, but you just, I think doing your homework, you can get a better cash flow on duplexes and quads, but it's just more homework that you need to do.
Yeah. That's strong. That's good. I like that. That's some good information. You know, I like the cash flow of a duplex or tri or quad because, you know, a lot of people know you can count it as a single-family residence for financing purposes, anything up to four units.
So right.
One to four units, you know, your standard loans apply. But if once you go over four and five units and up, then you start getting into commercial loans and commercial rates and programs and qualifying and that sort of thing.
And that's where it gets a lot more difficult.
Right. That's something else to keep in mind. Then the lender's going to look at you and your experience just as hard as they are you and your credit and income.
And I think experience is a key. I think once you're getting into the duplexes and quads,
mm-hmm.
you need to be an experienced in or have a good property manager.
Absolutely.
Because, again, you don't want to have four units that are vacant instead of one.
Absolutely. Isaac, would you take a few minutes and tell us a little bit about your business and how you operate? I mean, I know you guys have just a phenomenal business, and it's doing really well, and we're set up with you beside you at the vendor table, at the vendors as a vendor every month at Metroline Area, and I just see people crowding around your table and, you know, talking about buying one, two, three a month from you. Tell us a little bit about your business, Business Track Realty, and if you don't mind, would you give out your contact information, too, for people?
Sure. Let me start it off with Business Track Realty. Our phone number is actually 704-331-9940. Again, 704-331-9940. Or you can go on the web, and we're at www.businesstrackrealty. That's Business Track, T-R-A-C-K, realty.com. What we do is we are building a partnership with our clients where we're going to manage their entire real estate investment portfolio. And in developing that strategy, yes, that might be one house a week, one house a month, one house a year. Sure that we have that strategy developed.
Right.
Then we're going to sit down and say, okay, let's figure out the best way to finance it. Let's thing in point before we go find you the properties. Finding
right.
the properties is actually the easy part.
Right.
We want to make sure that we're sitting down and saying, here's some new investment strategies that you haven't thought of.
Uh-huh.
We have some people that thought about buying a house in the ski mountain instead of the beach house.
Uh-huh.
One guy is renting a house for about $3,000 a week, and no one else had thought about buying a house in Aspen, Colorado.
Wow.
It's just something that they had never thought of, but there are a lot of people that will pay to be on the slopes.
Exactly.
So that, I think the biggest thing that we're doing is, one, we're going to make sure that we represent the buyer. We
mm-hmm.
only represent buyers. But our goal is to take them from a baby step, educate them as an investor. Because I feel that if they're an educated client, I'm not worried about them leaving. I'm not worried about them not knowing. I want them to know how to evaluate deals. And that's what we do. We're going to go through the profitability analysis, the cash flow analysis, and we probably evaluate probably 500 deals a week, of which we recommend only 10%.
Well, you know what, and if you don't mind, I'd like to jump in here right quick. What I thought was the most impressive thing about your website, and you have just a very professional, very extensive website, and I really think the world of it. I love that website. But you know what I think is the most important thing about your website is the fact that because you were a buyer's agent and working exclusively with investors, you don't put every listing that's in the MLS on your website. You go through and you analyze the deal and you look at it and you run the numbers, you do the cash flow projections, and all of that. And then only the ones that meet your criteria at a starting point will you put on your website.
Right, and we literally start with about 20% in equity, and that's based on the tax value. And like you said, that's a starting point for us.
Right.
we have clients that will say, Isaac, I want to see house number 1913. Let's go deeper in that. We'll pull up market comps. Sometimes the market value is higher than the tax. Sometimes it's lower. But to the starting point.
Right.
And, again, because we're so numbers-driven in our business, we want to give the client kind of at least a brief photo of what your cash flow will be if you own this house.
Absolutely.
And that is critical. I don't think I can say that enough, being critical that a realtor should give you a cash flow.
Right.
And make sure that we know your strategy and make sure that we're sitting down with you on the strategy and help it change as it evolves over time, make you more an experienced investor. Because our goal at Business Track is, one, like I said, to educate our clients.
Exactly.
We assume our clients don't know anything when they come in.
Uh-huh.
And we love for them to prove us wrong, which they often do. But our job is really to make sure that they're staying on top of the latest trends because we're telling them about them. Or we're making sure that they don't have HUD, they're not overpaying HUD.
Right.
Or, you know, what is HUD paying? What's a good offer? I think the difference between us and other firms is, you know, sometimes they'll say what's a good offer and they won't tell you. We want to give our clients, this is exactly what we feel is a good offer based on this experience. And that's, I think, what we literally want to do is sit down with our clients and say, guys, going over everything we have, this is a good deal. This is what you should offer. Let us hold your hand if necessary to walk you through the deals. Now, as people get more experience,
right.
They have some of them that call Isaac, I saw this property, what do you think about it? And we tell them. And, you know, we're not afraid to give our opinion, and, you know, usually we're right, but we're going to back it up.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the big difference with Business Track is every agent there is an investor.
Right.
So
that
it's not
is,
something
you know,
we do it on
great.
The side.
That is great. I like the fact of that. It's kind of like here at our office in our mortgage company. You know, pretty much everybody in our office is a real estate investor, too.
And I think, well, our feel is you can't talk about what you don't know.
That's a good point.
So unless I'm in the trenches with you, I can't talk about it.
You walk the walk.
That's what we require from all of them. So it's literally, we're going to do the cash flow analysis. We're partnering with the clients. It's ours, as you said earlier, is a relationship management.
Absolutely.
Versus a buying one house, buying two houses. Let's have a good relationship. Let me sit down and say, guys, this isn't a good deal. We've had more clients that we've turned away from deals that people are amazed of.
But that's a good thing. You're building that long-term relationship.
Well, the great thing with us, I would say about 90 and 95 of our clients have come back to us to buy a second house.
Uh-huh.
Most of our clients actually buy a second house or look to buy a second house within an hour of closing. So we kind of laugh, but they always say, like, we just closed on this one, but I was on your website on the way up here.
That's funny.
Can we go look at another one? And again, I think it's the partnership that we're building.
Yeah.
They have gotten to the point where they trust us.
That's the key, and everybody needs to be looking for that type of partnership.
Well, my theory is, and as you were talking about building a great team, everyone on your team you should trust. Because we know that they trust us, makes us work harder, because it's kind of one of those, if you trust me, I'm obligated to you.
Absolutely.
Because I know you, I have your blind trust. I'm going to make sure you, one, won't lose money.
Right.
First and foremost. Two, after closing, someone's going to be there, you know, because those questions come up the next day. And three, we have your investment strategy. What are your goals? 1 year, 6 months, you know, 1 week.
Exactly.
And that's going to be the most important thing we can come up with.
Can you tell us a little bit about this real estate investment summit that you have coming up in February?
Oh, yeah.
And the reason behind that.
Well, the reason behind it was we've had so many people coming up and asking us questions that we had to call and get expert opinions on that we decided, well, how many other people want to know these expert opinions? So what we're doing is we're going to have the top attorneys, the top accountants, the top lenders. You and Wendy are definitely going to be there to sit down and answer questions. It's going to be people are going to give maybe a 5-10 minute presentation on what they do, maybe a little bit longer, but we're going to turn the field over to our audience, because we're finding audience are asking questions like, well, what type of loan is a good loan? What's the difference between hard money and soft money? What's the difference between how do I set up my LLC? What can I write out on taxes? Well, what we were doing, because we have a strong team, I would call an accountant.
Right.
I would call my attorney. I would call you guys as lenders and ask the questions. But what we found is there's so many people that just don't know.
Right.
And we really just wanted to come out and say, hey, guys, this is your shot to get all your questions answered.
Let's now, tell us about this event. Where is it going to be, and how can we get there, and how much does it cost?
It's going to be $12 entry, which just really covers our cost. It's going to be at the Four Point Sheraton downtown.
$12 per person?
$12 per person.
Wow.
Which is literally nothing for the information that you're getting.
Absolutely.
It's going to be downtown Charlotte at the Four Point Sheraton on February 26th from 9 to 3.
Uh-huh, okay.
And, again, we're going to start it off with the lenders will be going first, then the accountants, then the attorneys. We're going to have a section on property management because one of the things about property management, unfortunately, people don't know, is how to properly evict somebody.
Right.
But we're having an eviction specialist that's going to be there.
Wow.
You know, it's, people ask us all the time. It comes up.
And it's just this is really just a part of your services in offering helping you build a relationship with your customers, right?
Well, we want to build a relationship, and we're big like you guys are on the team building. We want everyone to have access to the team, and if we can't answer questions, then often we don't try. If you give me a question that's a legal question, I'd rather my attorney give you the answer.
Right.
Because he knows more than me.
Right.
So our goal is to build a relationship, but I think what will happen is your question might spur the person next to you to think of a question.
Sure.
And their question. And I think too often we leave, we get motivated, but we don't get the true answers to our questions. So we want all of our clients to come with pencils, pens, and questions. Think of questions before you leave.
Ready to take notes.
We actually, the funny thing is the people participating have said they're going to stay to learn more.
Yeah.
That's and great. They're going to be available after their and before. So if all your questions aren't answered during the hour to about an hour and a half time we have allotted, they're still going to be hanging around.
Oh, that's going to be great.
So it's a great time.
We'll definitely be there.
I would come, and our whole goal really is not to make money off of it. Our goal is how much knowledge can we give to our clients.
Right.
And
that's
good.
We'll be inviting our people, too. I'll put it out on the emails before February.
The knowledge is a dangerous thing, getting the knowledge.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, and it's the use of knowledge that's power, not just the knowledge itself.
Oh, yeah. Definitely the use.
Once you get it and then you use it.
And that's what we're setting up is it's literally an Ask the Expert session.
Absolutely.
And we're
going to
have one general session just on mistakes we've made and some of the tricks to the game.
Right.
It's going to be kind of a general of dumb things I've done.
Yeah, there you go.
So you guys don't have to.
There you go. And that won't last very long, will it?
My part can last hours.
Here you go.
But it's one of those, you know, if we can get a client to avoid making the major mistakes from the education, that's a benefit to us.
Right. You're exactly right. Well, man, Isaac, this has been a great call. You've given us a lot of good content, a lot of good information.
I truly appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, I appreciate it, too. It's just been a blast. We've had a great time.
I think for me, I'm like you. I'm big on knowledge. I'm big on the education. I'm big on we get questions that we get asked, and sometimes we don't know. But
exactly.
I guarantee you I'll find it out for you.
Exactly.
If I don't know, but it's to me, the more knowledgeable investors there are, the better it actually is for everybody.
Isaac, would you give out your contact information one more time, and then I'm going to tell about a couple other events coming up right quick.
Okay. Our phone number is 704-331-9940. Again, 704-331-9940. And one thing I would like to say, Larry, is with us, we have a team concept. So you won't just have one agent dealing with you as a client.
Oh, that's good.
You'll have five or six eyeballs on your portfolio.
That is a new concept. I like that.
And also, if one of your agents isn't available, say, is on vacation, you don't have to sit around.
Yeah, there you go.
There are going to be several other people that are going to do that. But our website is www.businesstrackrealty.com. Again, that's businesstrack, T-R-A-C-K, realty.com.
Good. That's great.
I would like to take a minute and tell people about a couple of other events coming up. Donna Bauer, national speaker, author, and trainer, who was on my teleconference last week, and she is going to be at Metro Lotteria on the 20th at the main meeting in Charlotte at the Hilton on Tavola, and she's also going to be having an all-day event. She's known as the Note Buyer. And she's got a great product out about doing short sales the short way, buying discounted notes, delinquent and performing notes, and doing it without any of your own money, cash, or credit. Well, money and cash, I guess that's the same thing, huh?
But, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, really. But she has a great program. She's a very good speaker. Good content, good meat and potatoes, core information, and she'll be doing an all-day event. And that event, since Metro Lotteria is a nonprofit, I elected to have, well, I and the board of directors of Metro Lotteria elected to have this event, even though it's a $69 event, we are paying to have her here all day, okay, for Metro Lotteria members. And not only Metro Lotteria, but if you're a member of any RIA group and you hear this, or you come to the event, if you are a member, just tell us which group you're a member of. You get in for free. We don't care, because our thing is giving back. We are a nonprofit association. We want to give back, and it's all about the information and the content and doing it when we can. If you're not a member, it's $69. But if you join, you show up Saturday morning at the Hilton on Tavola, just off of I-77 in Charlotte. If you show up there, 8:30 Saturday morning on January 22nd, if you join Metro Lotteria, it's $99 individual membership. Then you can get in free, and you get all the benefits of being a member of Metro Lotteria. Or if you go join your local club there. We're trying to help the other groups increase their membership. So if you join your local group and then just come up and come to our event, it's free. The other thing is I wanted to tell you about our boot camp coming up. A lot of people know about that. January 28th, 29th, and 30th in Myrtle Beach. We're paying for your hotel room two nights. We're going to have 9 different speakers, myself, Wendy, Sweet, Turk Akbay. I got John Morrow, who was on the teleconference about several months ago, talking about luxury homes. He buys 4 to 5 homes a year, minimum of $200,000 a deal. And his dad, who is also a multimillionaire, is going to be there and introduce John and talk for a few minutes, maybe even do a Q&A session. We have Gary Brevko, who's going to talk about foreclosures and some private money. And we also have Roger Schwartz is going to talk about commercial development and real estate. We have Wally, who is going to be there talking about commercial financing. And I have Graham Treacle, who is on his way to becoming a national speaker, and he has a product about short sales. And he's going to be there talking about short sales, buying properties, pre-foreclosure, doing short sales. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about how to analyze deals, how to find deals, negotiating. I'm going to make live phone calls right on the spot. You're going to get a forms disc with 58 different documents. I'm going to give you a CD with more live phone calls on it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's $1,495. And like I say, that includes a lunch and learn on Saturday where we pay for your lunch and we pay for your hotel room at Myrtle Beach. We have about 15 seats left as of right now, as of today. So actually, there was one internet order on the way in here tonight I just pulled up, so we actually have 14 seats left. So if anybody wants to sign up for that while we still have some seats available, our number here is 877-527-7946. It's very easy to remember. It's 877-LARRY-GOINS. 877, and you don't need the last 3 letters, so it's really 877-LARRY-GO. How do you like that, Isaac?
I need to get one of those.
No, we had to go through a lot of numbers to be able to get that. But if you'd like to sign up for that tonight, I'll be here for the next 30, 45 minutes. Just give me a call. If you have any questions, if you're kind of sitting on the fence, you're thinking, well, do I really need this? I've already bought some deals, or I'm just getting started. Is it going to help me? You call me. I will answer any of your questions. If you go to a Ron LeGrand event, they're gone the next day, but you'll have my cell number, as well as all the speakers that speak at my boot camp. They are attainable, reachable, and they
have a lot of knowledge.
I'm sorry?
And have a lot of knowledge.
Have a lot of knowledge. And I'm a firm believer that a good idea doesn't care where it comes from. You don't have to have a Ron LeGrand or a Lou Brown to come to learn from. I mean, that's the reason we do this Brain Picker Pro teleconference and have somebody new on every week. It's a tremendous amount of learning, being able to talk to different people. I've learned a tremendous amount from you tonight, Isaac, and I really, really appreciate you being on the call.
I appreciate you having me on, and I hope other people gain some knowledge as well. And if they have any questions, I hope they either contact me or contact someone. We definitely want to get all their questions answered.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this call is being recorded, so I'll be editing it and putting it out on the email and on the website in the next week or two, and so that way other people will be able to get the information as well.
That sounds great.
Good. Well, I appreciate you being on, and I appreciate everybody else being on the call, and everybody have a good night. Have a good night, Isaac.
Hi, this is Larry Goins, and I would like to thank you for listening to this audio program. I would also like to remind you to please visit our website at www.larrygoins.com for other information, as well as we have a link for freebies, we have articles that you can read, and we also have 3-day boot camps, as well as the boot camp in a box, which contains the complete 3-day boot camp on audio CD as well as DVD video. Please visit our website for the location and schedule of our 1-day and 3-day boot camps coming up. We also offer personal coaching and mentoring, so whatever your needs may be, please feel free to give us a call. If you are a real estate group, investor association, mortgage company owner, or other organization and would like to have either myself or Wendy Sweet or Leon Humphrey speak at your group about real estate and finance and investing, please feel free to give us a call. Our direct office number is 803-831-0056. I am at extension 304. Wendy Sweet is 310. I'd also like to remind you that we also offer traditional financing as well as hard money and rehab loans for investors. Please visit our website there at www.financialhelpservices.com. Thank you very much for your business. We sincerely appreciate it. And please remember, our mission is to put people and principles in front of profits. When we do that, everybody profits. Thank you and have a great day.